Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Hello, I'm Jeff Westover, lead crooner at MyMerryChristmas.com, the internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas, and this is the Merry Little Podcast, a momentary bit of Christmas intended to cheer and inform. As the proud parent of seven millennial children, I'm often asked the deep and probing questions of both youth and Christmas. I have recently been pressed into service and taken my two youngest girls, both now in high school, to school every morning, and that of course gives me an opportunity to expose them to my kind of music on the radio. And since I've been working on new Christmas mixes for Kringle Radio, they've had a taste of Christmas music already, and of course, being my kids, they haven't minded that a bit. But it did result in a question when Bing Crosby's White Christmas came on during a recent frosty morning ride to school. Dad, my 16-year-old, asked, "Why do we listen to this guy every year?" Well, this sweet daughter of mine was born in the year 2000, a full 23 years after Bing went to that big golf course in the sky. He was born in 1903, nearly a century before this child, and yet this daughter, who is as ardent a student and observer of Christmas as anyone, had no idea who Bing Crosby was or why we listen to him every year. And most people don't. They just know that he shows up without fail, kind of like Santa Claus. He's there with the tree, the eggnog, the mistletoe, the stockings, and every other trapping of Christmas. He might as well be Charles Dickens, for all they know. My 14-year-old also had to ask, "Dad, did you have to listen to this stuff at Christmas when you were my age?" And yes, of course we did. Really, I'm blowing her away. So did my dad when he was a kid. What my kids don't realize is that Bing Crosby was the first truly multimedia superstar in America. He first conquered radio, then record sales, then movies, then television. He died 39 years ago this week after a round of golf in Madrid, a few short weeks after recording his last big hit at Christmas, a duet with David Bowie. I shared that with my girls, and they were blown away. "Wait, wait, wait, Dad. The David Bowie?" Yes, kids, and he made an unforgettable Christmas hit with David freaking Bowie. Bing was born in Tacoma, Washington in 1903 and was named Harry Lillis Crosby Jr., a boyhood connection to a local newspaper feature called the Bingville Bugle earned him the nickname Bingo from Bingville, a name that was in time shortened to just Bing, and it stuck with him for the rest of his life. As a teenager, Bing worked in the local theater where he got to watch some of the best of vaudeville perform. For several years thereafter, Bing joined a group of former high school singers entertaining patrons in a local movie house between films. This led to a venture to California in 1925, seeking fame and fortune in the music business. He bounced around local theaters in Southern California for a year or two before catching the eye of the Paul Whiteman Organization, then one of the biggest representatives in the music business. That led to productions in New York, and performing with several of the most popular orchestras of the era. As Crosby's skills increased, he sang songs such as this one, recorded in 1928.
"Beautiful girl, your lovely picture. Beautiful girl, just a gorgeous mixture of all that lies under those big blue skies."
Even in that aged recording, it is easy to hear the talent behind the vocal stylings of Bing Crosby. A combination of changing technology and radio and maturing in his own natural vocal talent led Crosby to a single vocal act that led to a radio show contract with CBS Radio and a recording contract with Brunswick Records. By 1931, Bing had hit the big time. Radios in the 1930s was king. People know of that decade mostly for the Great Depression, but radio was the center of home entertainment, and Bing was the king of baritones. He became radio's biggest star and America's most popular singer. Crosby was an innovator and a risk taker. Long before Sinatra and Elvis became sex symbols as musical artists, Bing Crosby was revolutionizing music with performance antics. Some thought his vocals to be tantalizingly erotic, and his live performances before audiences were suggestively augmented by using his microphone as a prop rather than just standing there and singing into it as his producers wanted him to do. Crosby became the model of the modern crooner. Others who would follow, such as Sinatra, Perry Como, Dean Martin, and Tony Bennett, would all later cite Bing as a huge influence. Tony Bennett's uncle told the young Tony to keep your eye on Bing Crosby. He's the one you want to be like. He taught us all how to do it. Well, what was it? It was a warm musical style that combined elements of note-bending jazz with the rhythm of pop and swing to create a sound never heard before. It affected people. One fan of the age described hearing Bing on the radio at the time as drowning yourself in butter. Crafting his musical style was one thing. Getting radio producers to allow him to perform it the way he wanted was quite another. In this respect, the early efforts of Bing Crosby foreshadowed what was to come in future heartthrobs. The creative stifling that Crosby suffered from was not unique. While radio was the perfect medium to make him known, he had to sing the songs in a way different than what his instinct and his talent dictated. He clashed with producers over sound quality, song length, and arrangement, insisting that their only concern was for the studio audience who saw him versus the millions who were only hearing him. To prove his point, he merely pointed to the toupee that they made him wear. As Bing Crosby's influence and wealth expanded, so too did his reach in changing the circumstances of how he performed. In building his career, he had pioneered the art of singing with, instead of in front of, a microphone. Those early bits of artistic touches with the microphone might seem to be simple showmanship today that everyone does, but back in those days, it was radical and unheard of, and it changed how artists performed, and it put the focus on the soloist instead of the band playing behind him. Crosby built his own studios and started to record his own shows. This allowed him to place the microphones where he wanted, to produce the numbers he wanted in the way that he wanted them. He would rehearse and record before trying it before a studio audience, sometimes using the rehearsal copies of the recording in the final show package instead of the live performance. It took some doing, but Crosby was finally able to persuade the networks to air his recorded programs instead of doing them live. This allowed him to focus on show production in the studio, sometimes producing an entire series of shows at one time while freeing up his time for live performances. This broadened both his exposure and his profits even more. In the production of his own shows, Crosby invented standard techniques that are still in use today. He invented the laugh track, for example. Working with German engineers prior to World War II, Crosby invested in the development of recording tape technology that was so clean it could be used to produce broadcast quality recordings that sounded as good as a live performance. This led to other things like overdubbing, allowing an artist to harmonize with himself or with other singers, taking the performance of a song to a whole new level. Throughout the 1930s and into the 40s, Crosby became the leading singer in America and radio's biggest star. He parlayed that into acting, eventually starring in 79 feature films over the course of his career, winning an Academy Award. This dual media exposure made Crosby the first superstar and set the stage for a later career that kept him in demand well into his 70s. His earliest known Christmas song was a solo version of Silent Night, but it would become just the first in a long line of Christmas performances. His image was wholly American. In tune with the times, Crosby seemed to sing what people were thinking. When Irving Berlin wrote the song White Christmas in 1941, there was never another choice when it came down to who would be singing it for the film Holiday Inn. And though a simple song, according to Crosby himself, it spoke directly to the American heart and soared to the top of the charts and stayed there year after year after year for 11 consecutive years after World War II. Other artists tried to knock off White Christmas, including Crosby himself, with other classic Christmas tunes such as I'll Be Home for Christmas and a song like this one.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on.
Despite all this new Christmas music that Bing and others were putting out, nothing could stop White Christmas. It eventually became the best-selling single of all time, outperforming decades of classic hits from artists all over the world. At more than 75 years old now, the song White Christmas remains the de facto anthem of Christmas, with hundreds of millions sold and making it the most performed Christmas song by artists in nearly every genre. World War II not only defined Christmas music in America, it too reshaped the emerging image of Bing Crosby, who, along with Bob Hope, served during the war entertaining the troops in war zones. He was the man everyone wanted to hear sing, and by 1948 he was considered the most trusted man in America, bigger than the President of the United States or even the Pope. During these years, Crosby began to churn out what are now considered classic Christmas albums. Jingle Bells, sung with the Andrews Sisters, Melly Kalicki Maka, and Christmas in Killarney continue to be alternative Bing favorites. As the 1950s came around, Crosby naturally took to television and the annual Christmas television special. He continued to produce as well Christmas albums and appeared both on albums and in the specials of others. Music from the 1930s and the 1940s featured artists like Crosby that worked like crazy. If you take a look at the recording history of many of the popular singers like Crosby, you'll find that there were years where they would have a dozen or more singles that were published. They were almost all showcased on live radio programs. As music and technology advanced, exposure across the mediums provided new ways to present special music like Christmas music. Not only did Bing have his own television show, but he hosted variety shows such as the Hollywood Palace on ABC, whose Christmas editions always featured Bing Crosby with his family. He was there for every single Christmas. Crosby's acting career included several movies that have stayed perennially tied to Christmas. The Bells of St. Mary's, with Crosby in the lead as Father O'Malley, is still considered by some to be a Christmas film. The song White Christmas was repackaged as a movie in 1954, with Crosby in the lead there as well, and the movie continues now to sell well in formats like Blu-ray that Crosby could not have even predicted during his lifetime. Crosby also collaborated with other standout artists in their albums, radio, and television shows. He performed, it seemed, with everyone. Sinatra, Perry Como, Dean Martin, Tony Bennett, Elvis, the Andrews Sisters, Al Jolson, Jane Wyman, Peggy Lee, Louis Armstrong, and of course, David Bowie. For more than 50 years until he died, suddenly, he dominated media like no one else before or since. My kids, even though some of them are so young they don't remember Michael Jackson very well, will almost all cite him or Madonna as the biggest media stars of the 20th century. They're not even close. They can't even touch Crosby. Neither can the Beatles. Neither can Elvis. Neither can Frank Sinatra. Nobody in the 20th century was bigger than Bing Crosby. Advancing technology such as CDs and the internet have only added to his legend, especially in his works to Christmas. For generations of Americans, including my millennial children, it just wouldn't be Christmas without Bing. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Merry Little Podcast, and we invite you to join us in the year-round exploration and celebration of Christmas as we talk these and other things at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com. And if you enjoyed this discussion in this episode of the Merry Little Podcast, please consider becoming a premier member of our Merry Forums, where you will get access to all the archived and every new episode of the original Merry Podcast, each episode being more than an hour in length with topics just like this one. If you have a question, comment, or Christmas to share, don't hesitate to drop me an email at jeff@merrypodcast.com. For mymerrychristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.